So you know, it's interesting if you say, okay, so I'm gonna have that younger demographic. You know, it's a young bar, it's a beach bar. Let them go crazy. If you have regular customers, then they're going to object to you making them wear a mask. I get that. But if you need new customers to come in all the time because you're a tourism bar, et cetera, then images on social media and out in public are everything. So
yes.
I would propose to that tourist-oriented venue, what image do you want to project? The image of danger or the image of safety? And that's a tough question, yes. Boy. I think I would err on safety. Because if I have images of people acting unsafe and somebody gets contracts it in my venue, I could be finished.
I don't want to share someone else's thoughts. I want to create my own original thoughts. I want to create my own original solutions. I want to look at situations and come up with my own phrasing, my own words, and do it my way.
This is the John Taffer Podcast.
Shut it down.
Hello, hello, John Taffer here. This is my John Taffer podcast. Nice to have you all with me. And I want to start by thanking Mark Cuban for being here last week. That was a great interview, wasn't it, Corey?
Yeah, it really was. A lot of inspired people after that one.
I agree. And, you know, his message of challenge yourself every day is a really good message. You know, his story of how he created success really from nothing is a great, great story, how he built value. His ability to sell. And just keep selling and always selling things is also great. And you know what distresses me, though, Corey? And it sort of bummed me out. I really, when I looked at the social media comments after Mark's interview, I just don't understand why people made it political.
Yeah, I did see that.
Some people saying, oh, I hate him because he's, you know, this way political or that way political. You know, it's interesting. If you meet an axe murderer, like the worst guy in the world.
Right.
And you didn't know he was an axe murderer, and you sat with him for 20 minutes, you might find out he has a PhD in something. You might find out that he's unbelievably powerful and beneficial in one way, but there's a part of his life that makes him terrible overall. My point is this. Why can't we have people who we disagree with, liberals and conservatives, why can't they say, you know, I like you, man, I just disagree with you? But why can't it start with, I like you, man, I just disagree with you? Why the political disagreements? You know, why does Mark Cuban's political orientation impact his message of challenging yourself, trying to be successful, supporting charity, you know, working with his employees, being engaged with his employees and staying involved? You know, why does politics interfere with that message? You know, Damon John was on this show, and Corey, you remember that, and when Damon was on, he was talking about how he invested in about 81 businesses through Shark Tank at the time. I believe that was the number he said. It was
something
like that. You know, and Mark says to me, if I've invested in over 100. And I said, do you talk to those people often? He goes, well, sure, I have employees that do that. But yes, you know, we talk to them all the time. I want them to stay challenged. I want them to stay engaged. What's bad about that message?
People, they focus on the bad, John. That's just... You know?
But it's so unfortunate. Yeah. You know, here's a guy who has a basketball team, works out with the team every day, wants to know the players, wants to toss the ball around with them and stuff. Heck, when I had him on Bar Rescue, we saw the swoosh. I was pretty impressed from the other side of the street. But you know, I'm asking everybody. All of us have such positive things to say. We all have contributions to make to this society and to each other. And if we allow politics to create a brick wall before we can exchange those good ideas, boy, we all lose on that, don't we? And if Mark's politics allow you not to hear the message of challenge yourself, it worked for him. He's a billionaire. Work hard. It worked for him. He's a billionaire. Stay close to the people you're in business with. What's wrong with messaging that's like that? So I'm asking all of us, when we try to move forward and we're coming out of a difficult time for our country now, pandemic, demonstrations that turned into riots, unrest unlike I've seen in my lifetime. This is the time for understand that we all have contributions to make. And if we allow a political wall to get between us, then we rip each other off from each other's contributions. And that's not a formula for growth. Growth is discussion. Growth is dialogue. Growth is listening to the other side. Doesn't mean you have to agree with it, but we grow when we listen to the other side. Maybe they're right about a couple of things. If we refuse to listen, we don't grow. So, you know, there was a lot of good said in this interview. And Mark is a great guy. I know him personally. He's a good guy. He's a well-intended guy. Let's take the positive out of that type of a situation. And let's understand that President Trump says things that are constructive and positive sometimes, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
Now, let me give a silly example. I read this online the other day. President Trump said, why do we throw away masks? Why can't we reuse these things? Well, an industry has now popped up for sanitizing and reusing masks. Now, it was stupid when he said, you can't. But fact of the matter is, that idea turned into something. So it's difficult to suggest that our president hasn't come up with one or two good ideas, a couple of decent things in his time. Don't you think Joe Biden might come up with one or two ideas, a couple of contributions to make? Don't you think we're all idiots if we don't listen to both and pick up those contributions and try to grow as a society and as individuals? I think so. So I'm imploring you to think so also. Fuck the political stances, for Christ's sakes, and let's start learning about each other as people, learning about why these positions are so, so important right now, why dignity and self-respect and equality, why these things are so important right now, and how the minute you shut me down because of my political views, you are being discriminatory. That's what I think. You're being discriminatory to anything that's on the other side, and that is a formula for more divisiveness. So, this isn't normally a political show, but boy, did I go there today, huh, Corey?
Yeah, just a little bit.
But this is a message of unification.
It is. I mean, you always got to take both sides and take it for what it is. You know?
And make your own choice,
exactly.
Corey. But if you never hear the other side, you're not making a choice, are you?
No, you're being brainwashed in a sense.
Exactly right. And I'll tell you something. The other side has some good ideas, and I'd like to know what they are.
Yeah.
Because I might want to employ those ideas in my own thinking. So, you know, I started with Mark, who's a friend and a good guy and a great interview and all the positive aspects of his conversation. Let's pay attention to all the positive attributes of everybody's conversations, including the president who you might not like, the candidate on a Democratic side who you might not like, congressmen and senators who you might not like. Let's just keep our ears open and our frickin' mouths closed sometimes. So when we all start listening, we can all start understanding more. And through listening, we understand. Through understanding, we change. Through change, we start to come together. And you know, I think that that is the opportunity for us to do this. You know, in this pandemic, I've said this on this show, and I've said it on almost every news channel that I've been on. Boy, I've been on so many the past couple of months. That, you know, people are going to come back from the pandemic in thirds. The first third is going to come pretty quickly. And I said this, by the way, way back in March, Corey. You might remember I said third. I found it interesting that a big research report came out just a few days ago that said 31% came out initially. So I was off by 2%. I suggested 33%.
That's
so
awesome.
So my forecast was solid and right out of money. By the way, I was also the first one to say 50%. Capacity changes in restaurants, spacing in restaurants. We said all of this in early March. And I remember going on Laura Ingraham's show on Fox News when she looked at me and I said, nope, spacing, 50% capacity, washing hands, wearing masks. And she laughed at me. The restaurant industry will never do that. Well, Laura, you were dead wrong. They are. So the fact of the matter is, this third characterization that we talked about months ago is in fact playing out just like we said it would. So the second third is the reserved third. They're going to be a little reserved. They're going to wait and see what happens with the first third. Is there a surge in COVID cases? You know, the restaurants and retailers act well. Does it look safe on social media? You know, the commercials and the messaging, sending messages of safety. And if I feel good, then that second third will go out. The third third is the what I call the certain third. And they ain't freaking going anywhere, Corey, till they know that they can go out. And, of course, that third has most money. And has highest disposable income, tends to be a little older in age group. So, you know, that affects luxury sectors, upscale dining. And within those thirds, there's demographic issues as well that'll make a difference. So we as businesses need to understand that. And if we think to ourselves, okay, the first third is going to tend to be younger, then I better come out of the gate with product profiles that fit that first third so I can get over the hump. You with me, Corey? Because for that 6 or 8 weeks, that's all I got is that younger audience, sort of your age group, if you will, Corey.
Right, yeah.
So if I'm going to attack your age group, then I probably have to do some slightly lower pricing, right? I have to make it competitively. I have to maybe change the music program a little, make it a little hipper, make the environment a little energetic. I got to target that first third. And then as the second third comes in, then maybe we can look at an increased price or maybe adding a more expensive menu item or cocktail program. So we have to evolve with the pandemic and with the flow of customers. That's what I call resetting America. And I've been talking for 3 months about resetting America and the business planning that we have to do to reset America. And as I've been talking about this and working on this and spending hundreds and hundreds of hours thinking all of this through these past couple weeks, I got a very cool phone call and a message on our answering machine from a gentleman named Nick Parada. And Nick Parada has a master's degree in Homeland Security and Emergency Management. And he left me a fascinating message on my answering machine. And if there's any people I'd like to talk to these days, it's somebody who's proficient in Homeland Security and Emergency Management. So when I come back, I'm going to give Nick a call. I'm not even sure he knows I'm calling. I might surprise him. I'll be right back.
Don't shut down this podcast. John Taffer will be right back.
One thing we get on this show, Corey, is a lot of different kind of callers. I mean, we've had catering people, bartenders, business owners, real estate people. And then when we include the guests that we've had on the show, we've had rock stars, obviously. We've had even last week, it was my pleasure to have Mark Cuban here. But this is interesting. So I haven't had anybody ever call me with this degree before. Listen to this, Corey. I'm about to call a gentleman who called our show, a fan call. And he has a Homeland Security and Emergency Management master's degree. Now, I never even knew you could have a Homeland Security master's degree. But, you know, in today's environment, this is pretty important stuff here. When you thought about COVID and how that's impacting Homeland Security and travel, and then when you think about the demonstrations and in some cases the riots going around the country and how that's impacting Homeland Security, we had to call him. So I'm about to give a call to a fan who left a message on our voicemail. And by the way, if you want to call the show, it's very easy. Just send an email to podcast@johntaffer.com, podcast@johntaffer.com, or what is the phone number, Corey?
It's 916-842-5180.
Just call that number, leave a message, and I'll call you back, just like I'm about to do with Nicholas Perota. Homeland Security and Emergency Management Master's Degree. That's pretty cool shit. Let's give him a call, Corey.
Hello?
Nick, John Taffer here.
Hey, John, how are you?
Good. Nice to talk to you, buddy. Can I call you Nick?
Me? Yes, absolutely. Can I call you John?
You can, absolutely, buddy. So, you know, your call was really fascinating to me. I must tell you, I don't think I have. Now, I've spoken to many FBI agents, governments, people, congressmen, senators. I've spoken to a lot of people that I have never spoken to, I don't think. Someone who has a Homeland Security and Emergency Management master's degree. So, hats off. You picked a very timely profession, didn't you, Nick?
Apparently, I didn't really think I'd be using it in the private sector, but it's actually very applicable to what's going on right now. And it's really been great, and it's been able to help a lot of people.
It is. So you actually have a company in the private sector. So you're not working for government right now. You have your own company. Is that what you're doing?
Yes. So I was actually completing my master's degree. And in January, all of the courses switched over to being pandemic related. And so my thesis was on COVID-19 threat mitigation, and I'm working on it with a team of 9 other people, but my area specifically was threat mitigation in the private and public sector. And basically one of my friends who owned a beach club where I live in Long Beach, New York, and he asked me, he said, can you help me figure out a way to operate? And I said, sure, I'd love to. And it exploded from there. And I have more people calling me than I can keep up with even right now. But it's so great working with these people and, you know, just telling them that there is a way to find a solution right now, because all of them are just heartbroken and they're not sure how to adapt. And I'm like, there is a way and I can help you.
Wow. That's really powerful. And you know, what's interesting as a business owner, Nick, I find it fascinating how we were told how surface contamination can be a terrible thing. And then, you know, WHO, I'm sure you probably saw this a few days ago, said, no, surface contamination. And now they're backtracking, saying, no, we didn't mean it that way. I mean, so the amount of information that we're getting is so conflicting that as a business owner, we don't always know what to do. So you solved that for us.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm doing. And exactly like what you said, you know, it's so frustrating to these business owners where they have so much on their plate just trying to get their operations back to normal. And they don't have time to sift through all this information. And so, you know, I had the foundation. I spent over 1,000 hours looking into this from start to finish. And now as new guidelines come out, even though a lot of them are conflicting, as you mentioned, I'm basically just adding that to my baseline knowledge and I'm helping them navigate it. And it's the most frustrating thing has been when the public health concern does not equate to the government mandate. You know, people are always like, can you get my building safe? And I'm like, absolutely. This is how we're going to do it. We're going to make procedural changes to your operations. We're going to do some workplace changes to your operations. Mm-hmm. I'm going to meet you at whatever budget you need to be at. And I'm going to help you and I'm going to get you safe. But then when they ask me, when can I open? I always have to say, look, you know, these are the government guidelines in New York State right now. I can get you safe. I can absolutely get you safe. But, you know, I have to go by the government guidelines so that they're not opening too soon. And it's really, it's unfortunate for them because I tell them, look, you're safe right now. You could have guests in here. You know, your risk is very, very low. But you still have to wait until New York State gives you the okay to go.
Yeah. And there's been a real conflict. And I've been speaking about on this podcast. I find it incredibly frustrating that one state can have such a different mandate from another state. It's almost like it's a different illness, but it isn't. It's the same damn illness, right? And the cross-contaminant is the same. So I find it incredible how one state's numbers are can be lower than another state that enacts more policies. And I get density is a part of it, certainly, and even ambient temperature can be a part of it. I get that. But Nick, I got a question that's burning to ask you. When you were in school, And you were preparing for all this. Obviously, you went through terrorism and international threats and domestic threats and cells and understanding emergency management with regard to hurricanes and natural disasters. And you went through all of this training. And how many years were you in school?
John, so this was supposed to be a 2-year program. And I actually devoted myself to this. I'm actually not even done. I'm finishing in August.
So 2 years. So let me go somewhere with you, Nick. So 2 years of this program, and then you told me that in January everything shifted and they started focusing on pandemic and COVID and what we can do about that. Here's my question for you. Did they talk about pandemic or did they train you in this? Was there any discussion in this before it actually happened?
This is really interesting. So the way Homeland Security looks at everything and what I've kind of brought to these private sector businesses and organizations is that Homeland Security looks at everything from an all hazards perspective of it's not supposed to be reactionary. You are supposed to plan for any possible hazards.
Yep.
So in Homeland Security's strategic plan dating all the way back to 2007, when the first comprehensive plan came out, it said to prepare the nation for natural disasters, terrorism, and pandemic threats.
So it's been in there, but were you actually trained in pandemic threats? And was it, what I'm trying to get at, Nick, is was it part of the course curriculum to the level it should have been prior to this pandemic? Or did they shift curriculum because maybe it wasn't covered enough in the pre-pandemic curriculum?
Not nearly covered enough. And, you know, I've read through a lot of the state plans as well and how they're preparing for it. And this was not touched on. This was not a concern prior to this. You know, they would put in that, you know, beautiful mission statement, they would say end pandemics. And that was basically the end of the conversation. There was no, you know, there were small programs that basically never got any traction to biosecure the country, to implement bio threat detection sensors and all these ideas. And they never really went beyond an idea. They were kind of failed low end technologies. And Homeland Security was not prioritizing this. This was not on the nation's radar. You know, they were underfunding anything like this because they didn't see it as, you know, a feasible threat. And the federal government wasn't looking at it that way. And neither was any other level of government. And the private sector, I think, definitely wasn't prepared for this.
Yeah, but yet this could have been, not that I'm saying COVID was, because I don't believe it is. And I'm not a conspiracy nuts at all. But the fact of the matter is, you know, there could be a manufactured biological threat that we have to deal with, too. So in today's world, you know, pandemic is a real possibility, whether it be man-made or whether it be natural. So you'd Absolutely. Think it would be much higher on their priorities list. It actually, you know, shocks me a little bit. And I'm one who took political science in college, Nick. So
I did,
you
know, too, actually.
Oh, so you know what I mean. They should have contingency programs for every possible eventuality. And that's their job, exactly. is to have contingency programs in place. And every president and every government agency should have that. And the reason why those contingency plans exist is if a problem happens, they don't have to stop and figure it out then. They have already figured it out, so they can act rather than ponder when the disaster hits. And if we don't have contingency plans and actionable plans, then we pause and we freak out. And that's sort of what we saw in the beginning of this, don't you think?
Absolutely. And, you know, even looking at it state by state and how some states were better prepared than others, one of the things I noticed was that none of the states really were ever prioritizing pandemics, but a few of them were prioritizing disaster response and mass casualty situations. So Florida actually has the most robust emergency management program in the United States because they're always, you know, they get hit by a hurricane or a tropical storm. And they basically just immediately reconfigured this to another mass casualty event. You know, they weren't prepared specifically for a pandemic, but they had the infrastructure already in place and they were a little quicker to adapt it. And it's, you know, honestly, it's very scary to me that New York wasn't able to turn around and adapt to a mass casualty situation. New York should be better prepared than anybody.
You'd think, and when you looked at the statistics in Florida compared to New York, wow. I mean, it really showed how much better Florida did do in reacting to it, at least. And New York I don't want to get into the details, but, you know, there are a lot of mistakes, particularly made in New York. I'm talking to you from Las Vegas now, Nick. And here in Las Vegas, of course, we had our shutdown in the state for, I guess it was, what, 6 or 7 weeks, Corey? Our shutdown, something like that. And so I'm sitting home now in about my 88th day or something like that, Nick. But, you know, Vegas opened on Thursday. And I think you'll find this interesting. You know, I'm close with many of the executives that run these casino companies. In the average casino, they have implemented 800 policy changes all around COVID. Wow. From taking your temperature on the way through the front door to the way check-in is handled, to elevators, to upstairs, to back-of-the-house procedures, front-of-the-house procedures. And they've gone all of these steps, you know, to try to assure safety. But you know what I find interesting, Nick, and I'd be curious to hear your comments on this, and I've been saying this on some of the news channels this week. Let's say a restaurant puts everything in place perfectly. Nick, they hire your company. Mm-hmm. Let's say you come in, you do a complete assessment. They're doing everything right, from sanitizing to environmental to employee behavior, employee sanitation practices. They're freaking nailing it, buddy. But standing in front of that restaurant is a crowd of about 6 or 7 or maybe 8 people waiting to get in, and none of them are wearing masks, and are all standing right next to each other talking. Are you going to go in that restaurant?
You're absolutely right. You know, I'm not going to go in that restaurant because this can't all be policy changes. This can't all be procedures and new tactics. This is an effort on behalf of every individual. If every individual is not doing the right thing, and even if it's just in front of your business and they're not even in your business, it's going to turn people away.
That's what Absolutely. I think. So what I worry about is the businesses can do it all right, Nick, right? They do. And then the customer behavior makes them do it wrong. So I was talking to one of the news channels the other day, and I was realizing I was actually talking to Bar Business Magazine. And in the interview, I was talking about the fact that bar and restaurant owners need to make a decision. Now, the population's going to come back, and I've said this a number of times on this podcast, so I don't want to get into it again, but the population's going to come back in thirds. One third comes back quickly, another third waits a couple weeks to see what happens, and then the third doesn't come out at all until they know that they're safe.
Yeah.
Now, that third tends to have more disposable income. They tend to be a little wealthier. They tend to be a little older. So the initial wave out is going to be a little more value-oriented, if you will, more of the younger, fearless kind of crowd. Right? Maybe in your age group, Nick. So my point is this. My point is this. Let's say I operate a bar and I choose to say masks are optional. And now I got those 8 people standing in front of my bar without masks on. I could be screwed as a business owner. Let's say I say, nope, masks are required. Everybody, when you come in the front door, sorry, you got to wear a mask here unless you're actually eating or drinking. And now there's some young people who are going to say to me, I'm not going there. They make you wear a mask. If I do nothing, I'm screwed both ways. People who are okay with no masks are not going to like everybody in masks and vice versa. And I was equating this, and I'm curious to hear your comment on this, Nick, when I'm finished. I was equating it to a music choice. Now, let's say you and I were opening a bar together, Nick, and we choose to put in a country music program in Long Beach, California. I'm Long Beach, Long Island. Now, that means all of the rock people are not coming, right? We have completely segmented the market by choosing country music. You with me? Now, if you and I did the same thing and put rock music in or hip-hop music in, we're now chasing away the country fans. So in the bar and restaurant business, when we pick product and we pick price and we pick music and we pick logo and we pick positioning, we are segmenting the market. That's what we do. So when we build a restaurant, we choose. This is who we're building it for. So here's my question to you. Does a bar or restaurant today have to make a die-hard policy that you're going to wear masks in here or you're not going to wear masks in here? And does that policy relate to demographics or age of their audience? A younger audience, probably I can let the mask thing go. An older audience, I probably got to put it in place. Do you think they have to make that choice now or can they let the customers do it?
In general, I am all for letting people make their own decisions, and that if you don't feel safe in the establishment, then, you're not going to go to it. But that exact issue is something that a lot of business owners have been asking me. They've been asking me, do I require people to have their temperature taken on the way in? Do I require people to wear a mask on the way in? And I've been telling them that you're going to lose a portion of your market that may come later on if you're not doing this now.
Right.
Just to meet the guidelines, a lot of them have to make that diehard decision of this is the way it's going to be. I think it depends on the area. I think it depends on the demographic and who's going to the facility. You know, the beach clubs I work with are an entire different environment than the bars I go to. The bars I go to, they're like, look, these are local people. They're not going to want to come in wearing a mask. The beach clubs are all out of town people. And they're like, if everyone's not wearing a mask, and we're going to lose a lot of membership.
Yeah.
There needs to be a safe option. There needs to be a middle ground. But I think it's very dependent on the demographic that you're getting to your business. I think for some businesses, you're going to need to have a hard line and you're going to need security there, honestly, enforcing it and saying, listen, please put on your mask. It's a policy of our facility. And then there's going to be the other places where, that, that is a local dive bar. You know everybody going in, and if you tell them all they have to wear a mask in there, they're not going to come back. It's a really bad situation these business owners are in because there's not really a winning scenario.
No, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. It's interesting what you just said because that was the next place I was going to go. And by the way, you're a great guest, Nick. So, what's interesting.
Thank you so much for having me. This is amazing.
Oh, no, my pleasure. So, what's interesting if you say, okay, so I'm going to have that younger demographic. It's a young bar, it's a beach bar, let them go crazy. If you have regular customers, then they're going to object to you making them wear a mask. I get that. But if you need new customers to come in all the time because you're a tourism bar, et cetera, then images on social media and out in public are everything. So
yes.
I would propose to that tourist-oriented venue, what image do you want to project? The image of danger or the image of safety? And that's a tough question, boy. I think I would err on safety. Because if I have images of people acting unsafe and somebody gets contracts it in my venue, I could be finished. But I'm if I had a choice, if you back me in a corner, buddy, I think I'd have to go. I'd have to err with safety, but I wouldn't be happy about it.
Absolutely. And that's kind of the way I've been phrasing it to not just the bars and restaurants, but to every organization I'm with, that this is an opportunity for you to draw in a new market by, you know, hitting a new standard and saying, look, our facility is secured. We made everything. We did everything right. We have some procedures that you may not necessarily like, but we are safe. And I started working with a school the other day even, and this school has a very low enrollment. And I told them, look, I said, you may see an initial decline, but when, you know, the public schools aren't doing the right thing and other private schools aren't doing the right thing, and you have this, you know, beautiful standard set, and that people see the image of you doing the right thing, or same with a camp, with a bar, with a restaurant, whatever it is, when people see that standard, I think they're going to draw in new markets. So, and I've already been seeing that with some of the clubs that I've worked with. These are clubs that have never been sold out before with memberships. And within the first 2 weeks, all of them have waiting lists now. Clubs that never had a waiting list before now have a waiting list. And it's really, really interesting to see that dynamic start to play out.
Well, I think today that safety is a top on the list. You know, I'll go where they have my second favorite pizza if it's a safer kind of environment. So, you know, I think that when we take a look at these brands today, it's hard to close your eyes and picture a restaurant brand that's known for cleanliness. But 6 months from now, a year from now, Nick, there's going to be, all of them are going to be clamoring to be known for cleanliness. So, you know, I think that as an industry, I'm with you, buddy. We got to put all the policies and procedures in place. We have to build brand equity around safety today. I don't think this goes away so quickly. Do you, Nick?
No, I don't see it going anywhere. And I think some of these are going to, you know, you've said it on here a few times, that these are going to be policies that are carried forward even after this thing, even after there's a vaccine. Yeah. People are going to want to be known as the cleanest bar, the cleanest restaurant, the cleanest school, whatever it is.
Yep. So, Nick, do you mind some listeners asking you some questions online?
No, I would love it.
So why don't you give me an address where people can find you? And you know, maybe you can pick up some business, or I'm sure if somebody asks you a question or two, you'd be happy to answer it for them.
Absolutely. I would love that.
Great. So where is an address where people can find you?
Email address?
Yeah, whatever you like. And if you don't want to give it, that's okay. Don't give it. I'm just trying to give you an opportunity, buddy. Whatever you like.
Or social media would work too.
Or social media handle. A social media handle would be fine.
So on Facebook, I'm Parata Consulting LLC. So Parata is Perrotta Consulting LLC. My email is Parata, so Perrotta@gmail.com.
Excellent, Nick. Well, this was a great talk, buddy. I wish you a lot of success in your business. I hope doing this for you now gets you a little jolt of business. I think you're doing important work, buddy, and I think your attitude is freaking terrific.
That's awesome. John, seriously, I can't thank you enough for having me on. I've followed you forever, so thank you so much for having me on here. And I love helping these businesses. I love seeing, you know, the face of people when I put a plan in front of them and I can say, you can do this. You can move on. You can be prepared for the future. So thank you so much for the opportunity.
I think we can, buddy. I'm with you. Take care, Nick.
Thank you, John.
You know, it's interesting, Corey. I was talking last week, maybe even the week before, about how great marketers and promoters and operators are going to bubble to the top in this. And it's almost like when a forest burns down and those little sprigs pop up. Well, there was one. Nick is one of those people. Think about this. He's earned a master's degree in something that's very important. Even before he's finished with school, he puts 1,000 hours into a thesis, becomes an unbelievable expert on a topic at a young age. And what happens, Corey? He bubbles to the top. And there he was. And I got to tell you, that was a fan call-in, but that discussion was as good as any guest I've ever had on the show.
Yeah, we should check in with him in a few months.
Yeah, we'll see how he's doing. We will do that. So I got another cool message this week, Corey, from a guy named James, and James is in Chicago, and he was really concerned about preparing for the second wave, and his worry is that restaurants are going to open, right? We're going to be moving along. A second wave hits in the fall, and what happens then? And that's a very fair assessment. So let's give James a call.
Hi, this is Jake speaking.
James, John Taffer here.
Is this really John Taffer?
It is really John Taffer, man.
Oh, my God.
I can't fake this voice. I'll scream at you if you're more familiar with me at a louder voice tone, if that makes you... No, it's me.
Oh, my goodness. This is unreal.
How you doing, man?
Good. How are you?
Good. Well, you left me a message, and I thought I'd call you back. I thought you had a pretty good question here. You wanted to talk about second wave, right? A little bit. And sports. So talk to me, buddy. What do you want to talk about?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was just wondering. So I work in the beverage industry, so I was just wondering, like, from your perspective, we're seeing a lot of food service volume go up right now. And I was just curious how like the restaurant industry is prepping for a second wave and kind of what the new normal would look like if that were to happen.
Yeah, you know, obviously that worries us all. And many of the experts are predicting that second wave. So, you know, if we test our employees, and testing is becoming much more readily available now, so it's much easier for us to test our employees. I know here where I live in Las Vegas, there are many places where people can just go get tested on their own and get a test result. I think testing is going to be key. I think that we're going to have to maintain distancing. And, you know, one of the things I was talking about with the last caller, James, is the whole issue of, you know, are we going to institute mask policies? And, you know, bars are scared to say you have to wear a mask when you're not drinking. And, you know, they're scared not to have masks in. And, you know, it's horrifying if we don't project an environment of safety. But, you know, it would seem to me that if we stop the transfer of the virus now, meaning we really do employ distancing, we really do employ masks, we do really employ surface cleaning, and we really put in place all the employee procedures and such. And I said a little earlier, 800 policy changes in one casino here in Las Vegas, all related to COVID. Well, in theory, if we do all that stuff, James, do the numbers matter if it can't be transferred within our environment? I'm not sure it does. And I hear what you're saying, because you did, well, John, if there's more outside, then in theory, there would be more inside. I get it. But if we maintain distance, maintain service sanitation, maintain employee procedures, you know, do all of these things, then in theory, we're not cross-contaminating in our environment. And in theory, right, if we're not cross-contaminating, then we shouldn't cross-contaminate, whether there's a surge or not. Do you agree with my logic?
Yeah. Totally makes sense.
So the fact of the matter is, and I've said this to so many restaurant and bar operators, it all lies within our four walls. We can control that environment. And you know, temperature testing, for example, the casinos here, James, you're doing temperature testing on the way in, and you don't stand, they don't stand up and do it to you. It happens automatically when you walk through the front door. If somebody is of a high temperature, then a security person comes up and flags you, but you wouldn't even know your temperature is being taken. Then there's contactless check-in. Everybody's keeping a distance from each other. Chairs have been removed from most of the casinos, so you can't sit next to each other. You know, you can't stand next to each other. There's plexiglass between slot machines. And when you finish with a slot machine, here's a cool thing. When you finish with a slot machine, in some of the casinos, James, the machine turns off when you get your chit or stop putting your money in, and it won't turn on again until it's sanitized and reset by an attendant. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
So if a restaurant follows that lead or a bar and really implements these things and really does it, not saying, you know what, it isn't so bad right now, but being prepared for that, I think we will be prepared for that. And by the way, I have a lot of confidence in our industry, James. I think that we're good at this, and I think that we're masters of dealing with bacteria. This is just, you know, another invisible enemy. And I think as an industry, we can nail this. I'm more worried about customers being responsible with washing their hands and wearing masks than I am about the industry being responsible, honestly. What do you think?
Yeah, it totally makes sense. You know, so out in Chicago, they finally ruled out outdoor restaurants last week. And it seems to be going really well. There's a lot of, I want to say, a little bit of confusion. Some restaurants are doing it the right way and some aren't. Sorry to pivot, but I had one question that was kind of itching.
Yeah.
What is the long-term play for these outdoor restaurants and bars, maybe in areas like Chicago where it's going to get colder and eventually you're going to have to eat inside?
Yeah, that's the real difficult issue. And here, even in Las Vegas, we have the opposite because it gets 110 degrees out here, so you can't sit outside. But you're right, there's a seasonality almost everywhere in America that affects outside dining. If they're surviving on that outside dining platform and that goes away in Chicago, as it will, end of September, October, they're going to have a big problem. What they need to do now is prepare for it. For example, I'd be giving out coupons for deliveries. I'd be giving out a coupon for discounts and the delivery in October, one for November, one for December, one for January. I'd get you focused on delivery programs. I'd get you focused on other ways of doing business with me now. And, you know, it's interesting. It's tough to get delivery people into the restaurant today. I'm sure you agree with that. It's a lot easier to get people that come to the restaurant to turn into delivery customers. So when we do deliveries, I think it's critical that every delivery that leave every restaurant in America have a coupon to dine inside. And I think that every customer that comes inside to dine should get a coupon for delivery. And I think that we need to cross-pollinate both sides of the business very aggressively in that fashion. And if I cross-pollinate delivery to those outside diners for 2 months, 3 months, James, right, and start to build that online relationship with them, then hopefully deliveries can get me through in the wintertime. It's a great question, though.
And what are your thoughts on those third-party delivery services as well? Because obviously they're eating up the businesses, what's left chunk of change. So what do you think the future for those third parties like Uber Eats and Grubhub is going to look like?
Well, personally, I'm very against them. And for listeners that don't know this, they can charge up to 25, 35% of the delivery fee. I mean, a restaurant makes 10 to 12% if they're lucky on the deal. So the restaurant doesn't make money when you call these third-party delivery services. Now, in some states, they're starting to negotiate. In one state, I forget which one it is, James, they actually capped the fees. And third-party delivery services are only allowed to charge a certain percentage because it's completely unreasonable. So now there's a whole bunch of new things popping online. For example, Shift4 Payments, who owns four POS companies, which I happen to have a great relationship with them. You see them on Bar Rescue all the time, Harbor Touch and Posi Touch, Restaurant Manager. They'll own those POS companies. They now have software for free that a restaurant can use to create delivery transactions and addresses and all of that. Also, I'm seeing restaurants share drivers, which is a really cool idea, James. Let's say that, you know, there's a pizza place next door and you know, you have a pub and you're selling burgers and stuff to go. You could split a delivery driver, which cuts the cost, obviously, right in half from the get-go. So I don't think third-party delivery services are going to work long-term. I think that their business model is greatly threatened. And I think as every opportunity to move away from them becomes more available, and you see them online every day, I think they're going to lose less and less business. I wouldn't want to be a shareholder in those companies today.
Wow. Cool. Well,
anyway,
John, I have one last question for you.
Sure, buddy. One more. We go.
I really appreciate you staying on the line for so long. What is the most interesting, new idea that you've seen a bar or restaurant roll out in this COVID environment that's been successful?
Couple of fun things. One, I've seen some bars, and I worked on one to do it, that created cocktails without alcohol in states where you can't do alcohol to go. And it's simple. You get an incredible margarita, an incredible zombie, an incredible, and you just put the booze in at home. So that's worked really, really well. So, you know, you get the margarita, you just put your tequila in at home, and you're good to go. That's worked really well. There's some other restaurants that have been doing these family meal packages. And, you know, bars operate for singles and couples. But, you know, when those singles and couples are home, they're with families. So family packages, dinners for four, dinners for six, are working out very, very well for many, many restaurants. Rather than selling one burger, sell three for Christ's sake, sell four for Christ's sake. Put together family packages with sandwiches, entrees, even give them a couple of slices of cake for dessert to add value. These are the kind of things that we're seeing are working right now. And it's taking what used to be our business, which was merchandising at the table. And now we have to merchandise all the way to home too. Anyway, I got to run, James. I got more callers waiting, buddy. It's good to talk to you.
Okay.
Take care. Well, those are two pretty cool calls. You know, James has got me thinking, and look, if I was in Chicago and I was having all my seating outside, I'd be pretty worried about September myself, Corey. So, you know, that's really a powerful point that restaurants in these winter environments need to start thinking about and get ahead of. We had two pretty serious calls.
Yeah, we did. They were good, though.
Well, how about a fun call? I'll let you pick, Corey.
All right. All right, I'm not going to tell you about this one. I'm just going to call.
Okay.
Hello?
Jerry.
Yes.
John Taffer calling. How you doing, buddy?
Good. How are you?
Good. Did I surprise you a little bit?
Yes, you did.
Well, you left me a message. I'm calling you back. What's so unusual about that?
I didn't see on caller ID that it was my good friend, John Taffer.
Ah, well, it's your buddy calling. How you doing? So you had a question for me today, and I'm curious to hear it because my producer, Corey, didn't tell me what it is. He just said to me, he's got a question for you. It should be a happy call. So I'm counting on you, buddy. What do you got?
I just wanted to know what food you would pick if you had to eat one food every day for the rest of your life.
Ooh, okay. Now I got to say this. Is this a setup because you're in Philadelphia and you want me to say a cheesesteak? Is that what's going on here?
I hope you say it, but I won't be sad if you pick something else.
Well, I'll tell you a funny story. In season two, we shot in Philadelphia for about 5 weeks, I think it was. And every day we sent a production assistant out to get cheesesteaks twice a day from a different location. So I must have eaten 30, 40 different cheesesteaks over those weeks that we were shooting in Philadelphia. I'll never forget it. I had cheesesteaks twice a day. We all did. So I'm not going to tell you what my favorite was. I will only tell you that they're great, and there was a lot of great cheesesteaks in Philadelphia. It's tough to pick the best. But when you ask me a question like that, cheesesteaks go through my mind. You know, Italian beef sandwiches in Chicago are pretty incredible. You know, pizza in New York is pretty incredible. I'm a steak man. I love a great steak. You know, a good burger, I'll drive 100 miles for a great burger. You know, the right blend, you know, juiciness, thickness, you know, the perfect burger. I'm not a bad lobster tail man or a lobster guy as well. So there's a lot of foods that I love. But if I had to pick one, and by the way, as soon as I answer this, I'm going to make you answer it too. So you start thinking I'm cornering you too. If I had to pick one thing to eat for the rest of my life, I guess I'd have to choose steak.
All right. You're a man of great taste. We already knew this, though.
But can I tell you what my second choice was going to be just for the hell of it because it was close? I almost said Nathan's Hot Dogs.
Oh, what a sneaky good choice.
Now, I love Nathan's Hot Dogs. I'm into a skin-on hot dog. You know, I like it when it has a skin, a casing on it. So when you grill it, it pops when you bite into it. And being a New Yorker, I've always loved Nathan's Hot Dogs. So I must say, if I was cornered on a desert island and they didn't have steak, I'd be okay with those Nathan's Hot Dogs, buddy.
Man, really good choice. Most people give a generic choice like sushi or pizza. Very good.
So what's your choice?
Well, John, I'm going to surprise you too. I'm going to say, because I don't have this often, but I enjoy it so much, I'm going to say, as I like to say, I like having, you know, good old pork chops, or as we call it, hog, you know?
Sure.
We're going to go have a pork chop. We're going to have some hog.
So are you a grilled guy or baked guy or fried guy?
Really, I like the grill. I like savoring that grill taste. Grilled hog is how I like to have it.
Well, I got something for you that's really easy to do. Run to a supermarket, get some tiger sauce. Comes in a little bottle, almost like a Worcestershire size bottle. It's a sweet, spicy sauce, tiger sauce. We brush a little tiger sauce on those chops, put them on the grill. The tiger sauce caramelizes a little bit, adds a spicy, sweet flavor. Give it a try, buddy. Really good. You'll enjoy it with your pork drop.
Amazing. Thank you.
Well, take care, Jerry.
You too.
I'm going to go off and have some Nathan's hot dogs. Talk to you later.
All right. Sounds great.
You know, I normally don't get into political rants, but I did this week a little bit. And you know what? I look back at that rant, Corey, right now, and I have no freaking regrets.
That's good.
You know, I think that anything that we can do to get each other to listen, sometimes shut our mouths, open our ears, be open to different views, different ideas, I think the more we do that, the better we are as a society and the less divisiveness we have. So if there's anything that I'd like to take from this show today, it was Nick Perotta, who's helping restaurants reopen to keep everyone safe. It's James, who I spoke to earlier, who's worried about restaurants and the surges and trying to protect his business and his future. And then it's people like Jerry, who, you know, is just trying to have fun and see what my favorite food is. My point is this: our lives must go on. They must go on post-pandemic, post-demonstrations, post all of these situations that we're dealing with now. It must go on. And it only goes on if we listen and communicate in a constructive way. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you all next week. Bye-bye.
Subscribe to the John Tapper Podcast right now for more episodes every Thursday.